This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a Kenyan judge has given striking doctors 5 more days to call off a nationwide work stoppage over compensation and other issues or risk going to jail. The ultimatum came as their supporters demonstrated outside a Nairobi courthouse.
That's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, human rights groups fear plans to extradite nearly 200 suspected Burundi rebels back to their homeland could lead to their torture or death.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, a Kenyan judge has given striking doctors 5 more days to call off a nationwide work stoppage over compensation and other issues or risk going to jail. The ultimatum came as their supporters demonstrated outside a Nairobi courthouse. Jill Craig has more on the strike that has paralyzed the public health system.
Hundreds of doctors and their supporters marched Thursday to the Employment and Labor Relations Court in Nairobi, some waving Kenyan flags and others carrying signs saying it is actually the Ministry of Health that is on strike, not the doctors. They are protesting what they say is the government's refusal to abide by a 2013 collective bargaining agreement as the national doctors' strike nears its second month. Inside, Judge Helen Wasilowa announced she would be suspending the jail sentences of 7 medical union officials.
So I'll suspend this sentence further. So the doctors will not be going to jail today. They have 5 more days. And this 5 days is not for negotiation, in my view. It's for calling off the strike.
She added negotiations are permitted to continue during this period. Earlier this month, Judge Wasilowa sentenced the officials from Kenya's Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists, and Dentists Union to a suspended 1-month jail term for disobeying a court order to end their strike. They were given until January 26 to finalize negotiations with the government or face jail time. The union has argued the government used these pending jail sentences as a bargaining chip to delay negotiations. Protester Dr. Andrew Watende says this is unacceptable.
In this kind of engagement, one side is at disadvantage. One side has a sentence hanging over their head. The other side, there are no consequences. And so you can take your time. You can disappear for 5 days. Who will we negotiate with?
Union officials argue the 2013 collective bargaining agreement would increase their salaries by 180%. Last year, a judge ruled the agreement was unregistered. Kenya's government has responded with an offer of partial salary increases, but also threatened to fire all striking doctors. A request for response from Kenya's Ministry of Health and a government spokesperson went unanswered. Union board member Dr. Dennis Miskela says he and his colleagues are prepared to go to jail to show the importance of their cause.
Because if it is jail, that will take for us to get Kenyans where they're supposed to be. So be it. Mandela was jailed for South Africa to get freedom. Martin Luther King was killed for the blacks' rights. Even in our country, the president's father was jailed for us to get our independence. So if jail is what it will take to give us good health care, we are ready for it.
Kenya's health system has been overwhelmed by the strike that began December 5th, with some estimates putting the number of resulting deaths in the dozens. The doctors are scheduled to return to court next Tuesday. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Human rights groups fear plans to extradite nearly 200 suspected Burundi rebels back to their homeland could lead to their torture or death. The Democratic Republic of Congo says it is finalizing plans to return 186 of the suspected rebels who were captured near the Burundi border in the past 2 years. Violence broke out in Burundi after President Pierre Nkurunziza announced plans to seek a third term. The United Nations and other rights groups have accused Burundi of human rights violations, such as torture, summary executions, and arbitrary detentions. Reuters news agency quotes a spokesman with the Paris-based International Federation for Human Rights as saying, tribunals in Burundi are not impartial. He says there is a systemic practice of torture and extrajudicial executions. A Burundi official says he has no information on the extraditions.
In Libya, representatives of the internationally recognized House of Representatives and the National Libyan Army, which is backing it in the east of the country, have expressed their frustrations with the West for supporting their rivals in western Libya. The leader of the army is Khalifa Haftar. He recently visited Russia's carrier in the Mediterranean and spoke to the Russian defense minister via video link about fighting terrorism in the Middle East. The move is perceived as another sign of Russia's efforts to have a say in the Libyan conflict. Mark Katz is a professor of government and politics at George Mason University near Washington, D.C. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about the assessment of the Russian moves in Libya.
I don't think it signals a Russian willingness to intervene in Libya the way it has done in Syria. I think that for the Russians, what they feel is that the internationally recognized government is not very effective. This General Haftar is, and more importantly, they're not doing it alone. They're doing it, supporting him in conjunction with Egypt, with the UAE. I hear even France has been supportive of him.
So could Russian support embolden Haftar in making a play for power in Tripoli?
Well, it certainly won't prevent him from doing so. You know, I think that if anything, that if he sees that he's getting international support and that other international actors are not doing anything to stop him, that I think that there is a possibility that he will be emboldened.
But a move like this is likely to fuel conflict and represent a major setback for the unity government in Libya.
Certainly so. It seems that there's conflict either way, whether he moves or not. On the other hand, if he does move, obviously it is a setback for the unity government. But I think probably from the Russian viewpoint as well as others is that in that the unity government doesn't seem to control much, they may as well put their support on someone who has a better chance of doing so.
So for economic purpose and geostrategic interest, do you think Russia could see Libya as a way to anchor its return to the Middle East?
I think it certainly helps expand it, that there are actors in the Middle East who are eager to have Russian support. Russia seems to be willing to give it. So far, it seems like a fairly low-cost operation, but of course, these things have a way of escalating, don't they? So, but right now, I think Vladimir Putin is riding high, and he doesn't see any opposition, I think, from the U.S. or from Europe. So I think that he does see this as an opportunity to expand Russian influence.
Hoping for more support for his anti-Islamic groups stands from new U.S. President Donald Trump. Do you expect Haftar to position himself as a new ally in the fight against violent extremist groups?
Absolutely. I think he'll be happy to say whatever he thinks the Trump administration wants to hear him say on this matter.
That was reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi. He was speaking to Mark Katz, professor of government and politics at George Mason University in Washington, D.C. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 14 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Striking doctors in Kenya have been given five more days to call off a nationwide work stoppage over compensation and other issues. And human rights groups fear plans to extradite nearly 200 suspected Burundi rebels back to their homeland could lead to their torture or death. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Dot com. In an effort to improve the international response to combating multidrug-resistant tuberculosis, the Medicines Patent Pool, MPP, announced this week its first license for tuberculosis treatment. The UN-backed public health organization has teamed up with Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. Together, they will facilitate the clinical development of the TB drug candidate, cetazolid. The WHO estimated 1.4 million people died from TB in 2015. And TB is the leading cause of death among people living with HIV. That makes it one of the top 10 causes of death worldwide. Cetazolid is an antibiotic that has long been considered a promising treatment. Scientists say it could potentially be used with other drugs to provide a faster-acting, more effective treatment for both drug-sensitive and drug-resistant TB. Chan Park is general counsel of the Medicines Patent Pool. He spoke with me about why urgent action is needed to advance the development of the drug.
It's a drug called cetazolid, and it is a promising drug compound that has been stalled in development for a number of years. It had just passed phase one studies and just started phase 2A studies before the development was stalled as a result of the transfer of the rights from Pfizer to a company called Sequela. This is a promising compound for TB treatment, particularly for something called drug-resistant TB, which does not respond to the conventional TB treatments. And there is a pressing need in global health to develop newer and better drugs for drug-resistant tuberculosis, as current treatment requires over 2 years of treatment, tens of thousands of pills, painful injections for months at a time. So there's a desperate need in the global health space to develop new and better treatments for TB. And unfortunately, the current landscape is that private companies are not investing the amount of money that's necessary to develop new TB drugs because of the unattractive market, given that most of the people who have TB live in poorer countries in the developing world.
So the partnership that you all will have with Johns Hopkins University will allow you to be able to speed up the process of potentially getting this treatment on the market?
That is the intention. This is the first step in a series of subsequent steps that will have to happen before the drug is further developed and then hopefully approved and considered safe and effective for the treatment of TB. Our next step after this would be to seek drug developers, whether they be private actors or nonprofit organizations, who are willing to take a license from the Medicines Patent Pool to develop the work further. As I mentioned, it's stuck in phase two clinical trials, so there's still quite a bit of investment that needs to be put into conducting further clinical trials to prove that cetazolid in combination with other TB compounds is safe and effective in treating tuberculosis.
As is pointed out in your press release, TB is still one of the top 10 causes of death worldwide. So you think it's because it's in developing countries is why it's not such a top priority?
That's unfortunately been the case, not just in TB, but along a number of what are often called neglected diseases. The current system that we have for incentivizing drug research and development relies on there being a market for it, for diseases that affect both the rich world and the developing world equally. For example, there's significant burden of HIV in both the rich countries and poorer countries. So there is quite a robust pipeline of new HIV drugs coming down the pipeline. In the case of TB, it's a very, very different situation where it just in the low and middle-income countries and the high-income countries accounts for 98% of all global TB incidents, and 95% are in developing countries, in low and middle-income countries. So the commercial attractiveness for a drug developer is not the same as is the case in HIV or cancer or diabetes or the like of diseases that are more prevalent in high-income countries.
Once the treatment does reach the marketplace, how will patients in Africa, for instance, how will they benefit from it, and how will they be able to access the treatment?
It is our hope that whoever successfully develops the drug, the model of the medicine's patent pool is to engage in non-exclusive licensing, so to license for manufacture and sale to multiple manufacturers so that those manufacturers compete with one another in bringing drug prices down. We have seen this work very effectively in the case of HIV, which is the core area that started our work. There are multiple drug manufacturers, generic companies for the most part, compete with one another, and that results in dramatic reductions in costs as compared to what the originator charges in high-income countries. And our expectation is that if and when the drug is successfully developed, we will license it to multiple parties. They will compete with one another in achieving the lowest possible sustainable price for the drug.
Chan Park is general counsel of the medicines patent pool. He spoke with me from Washington.
Zimbabwe's ailing economy has often made headlines over the past 10 years. The industrial town of Bulawayo has been hit the hardest. Busisa Moyo is the president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries and CEO of United Refineries Limited, one of Zimbabwe's biggest cooking oil companies. Reporter Kudzana Vashi asks him about some of the challenges facing Zimbabwe industries.
Well, the climate is a difficult climate. There are lots of challenges. In particular, businesses in manufacturing are settled with a high cost environment. And this is the biggest challenge. And likewise, the issue of antiquated equipment, old equipment, in particular in manufacturing. So there's an outstanding need for retooling and recapitalizing. Linked to that, or the impediment, why haven't companies retooled, is because of issues of cost of finance. Access to finance and cost of finance. Interest rates are very high. The structure of financing that is available is not conducive for industries to bring in capital equipment. You need structured finance for that. So you need loans that are structured in a manner that is conducive to retooling and recapitalization.
Bulawayo was known as an industrial town. To what extent has this affected Bulawayo?
Well, Bulawayo has been significantly affected as an industrial hub because a lot of the things that I've highlighted affected Bulawayo negatively because it was a manufacturing city. Manufacturing cities are very sensitive because manufacturing, by nature, requires a low-cost environment, requires stability. So any instability, any changes, wild swings, you know, it creates problems for manufacturers pricing their products, exporting products, which Bulawayo used to do. It used to be an export city, exporting the EU, CSC, exporting shirts, garments, manufactured textile shoes were being exported. So manufacturing requires a low-cost environment. It requires a stable environment in order to thrive.
What do you think can be done to shock Zimbabwe's economy back to life?
I think that it's careful planning, it's hard choices, it's getting scale, slowly over a horizon. It's planning long term for the kind of economy we want. There are no magic wands. There's nothing that we can do quickly and get things back. We just have to plan carefully. And at CZI, the big discussion points are around value chains. We have to look at our value chains, whether it's our leather value chain, which is one value chain that used to operate in Bulawayo, the clothing, the cotton to clothing value chain, which also used to operate in Bulawayo, the steel and steel manufacturing value chains, which also was in Bulawayo. So we have to look at those value chains and say, how in this current environment, with a China which wasn't there in the late 80s as strong as it is, how do we reconfigure the economy, and how do we develop new industries as well as revive old ones?
The government has shown interest in fixing the economy. And one of the initiatives that they've introduced is the Special Economic Zones Bill. Do you think this will be enough to get Zimbabwe's economy back to its former glory?
I don't think that it's enough. I think that it's a step in the right direction. What remains to be seen is the implementation as usual. So the bill is a fantastic piece of legislation in the general economy. So I think it presents an opportunity for entrepreneurs and for the country to emerge from its current problems. But I would be careful about, again, magic wands and panaceas. There are no such things. There's no one thing you do and everything works out. Special economic zones are one component to the solution that the country needs. Value chains are another. Cluster-based development is another. Developing clusters. You could have clusters of canning fruits, things like that. You've already got a vibrant banana industry. You've already got mangoes and apples and things like that. So you create a cluster of industries around that particular value chain or horticultural value chain, and you develop that.
Do you foresee the year 2017 in the business climate?
Well, I think 2017, if we do the right things, we need to focus on exports. As I've said, the key focus, first of all, as a country, we need to focus on economy. How do we rebuild the economy? How do we create policies that are economy friendly and that don't hurt the economy, but build it, heal it and build it? And then we have to talk about those issues. And key among those is our repayment of the debt that we owe. We owe $11.2 billion. We need to, as a country, be clear and have a clear plan on how we're going to repay that debt.
That was Busisi Moyo, president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries and CEO of Refineries Limited. He was speaking with reporter Kudzana Vashi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
More than 600,000 people died from malaria last year. Most of those were children. But you can help protect your family with some simple steps. Mosquitoes transmit malaria. Therefore, try to avoid being bitten. Empty all containers of standing water. Water jugs, bottles, cans, and containers that livestock drink from can be breeding grounds for thousands of mosquitoes. Clean your roof of any rubbish where water can collect. Empty any ditches or holes of standing water. Avoid going out when mosquitoes feed, at dusk, overnight, and early in the morning. Sleep under insecticide-treated bed nets.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
The best footballers must have dedication and teamwork. And to end malaria, we need this same unity. Join with leaders like President Sirleaf.
Malaria stops footballers from scoring and students from learning.
And join with footballer Didier Drogba.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
United, we can beat malaria.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee.